Paper 26. That's an old single column, page 285. Okay, so remember there's these three different categories that they've selected to give us out of all the gazillions of different beings that are, that originate in the third person. We have the higher personalities, the infinite spirit, and we have the messenger host of space. And now we're going to get into the angels, you know, quote unquote. We're going to get into the ministering spirits. And, you know, even with the limitations of what they can reveal, you still have quite a diversity of angels that certainly mankind has never appreciated before the revelation, that you have this whole vertical hierarchy of angels. And of course, that's basically why there's never been any appreciation. There just has never been a recognition of just how much verticality there is to reality, how much vertical space has to be spanned, and that it's completely illogical that you could have a being that deals with such specific issues also be able to function, you know, almost, you know, level independent. They're going to have to be a lot of different groups of beings that can deal with this level and then that level and then that level, etc. Because there's a lot of details on every level. And even though, as you know, as we'll see right away, the angels have great innate abilities mindily, still, it takes a great diversity and complexity of angels. So we all know that as you go through the, you know, parts 1, 2, and 3, you get all kinds of details about this complex angel phenomenon. You know, until it finally comes all the way down to the angels that are directly engaging individuals, you know, and as guardian angels. But those, you know, guardian angels won't be the immediate subject. First, we have to deal with all of the higher issues. So let's just jump in.
Paper 26, Ministering Spirits of the Central Universe. Supernaphim are the ministering spirits of paradise and the central universe. They are the highest order of the lowest group of the children of the infinite spirit, the angelic host. Such ministering spirits are to be encountered from the Isle of Paradise to the worlds of time and space. No major part of the organized and inhabited creation is without their services.
So, you know, again, referring to that whole structure, but again, just to, you know, to stress that last element, no major part of the organized and inhabited creation is without their services. Well, why? Because the third source and center is the individual that's responsible for making sure that everything works. That's the spear point of existential deity, the god of action. And there's a lot of actions that are initiated by an infinite god. So it takes an infinite being to keep tabs on all those actions. And just to deal with a very circumscribed aspect, it's going to take a lot of beings. You know, so like, just stressing again, like we've mentioned a couple times, individual numbers of a given order are often very large. But like I said, I mean, just the different orders, all the orders they haven't revealed is beyond our concept. So you're just, you know, you're almost seeing in individuality form a manifestation of infinity. You know, there's almost an infinite number of beings. You know, it's effectively infinite from our limited perspective, just the number that it takes to handle the grand universe, some one tiny little portion of the master universe. So just always keep in mind, you know, that there's a complexity that they can't even begin to try to convey to us to get us to appreciate, because it's just so beyond our scope of consciousness. So don't let it, if it seems like it's like that seems like pretty straightforward. I think humans could do that. Don't let that thought stand. You challenge that thought. Know that it's always much, much grander than some simple little story that they're trying to give you.
Number one, the ministering spirits. Angels are the ministering spirit associates of the evolutionary and ascending will creatures of all space. They are also the colleagues and working associates of the higher host of the divine personalities of the spheres. The angels of all orders are distinct personalities and are highly individualized. They all have a large capacity for appreciation of the ministrations of the reversion directors. Together with the messenger host of space, the ministering spirits enjoy seasons of rest and change. They possess very social natures and have an associative capacity far transcending that of human beings.
Okay. So now just notice something interesting that they do. We just went through a whole paper, and those of you who are, were here for all those sessions on this previous paper, there was a lot of heavy elements, challenging elements, and there was also a lot of, it's like, wow, it's starting to not feel very personal. It's starting to feel like a vast machine with all sorts of automatons, being the micro mechanisms of this vast machine. Isn't it personal? Am I doomed to have to blend into a machine, a vast, cold machine? They know you're feeling that. And they're about to go into now a whole more vast, all these different angels and all the different things they do. And they know you're going to get lost in that, to a degree to begin with as well. So they give you a little transition paragraph to remind you, don't ever forget, no matter how complex this is, no matter how machine-like the acts of perfect or near-perfect beings may seem to us, they're not even remotely machines. They're, what does it say there? The angels of all orders are distinct personalities. Every one of these beings, doesn't matter what being you're talking about in the book, if they're a being, they're a personality. Their personality is absolutely unique. And it's destined for association with the infinite all are. It hungers for relationship, unending relationship, in length and in breadth. Okay, to mention depth, of course. So they're personalities. They're highly individualized. They don't function like some just force, where their individuality just blends into some presence that just controls things. Like may the force be with you. It's not like that. They're distinct individuals, and they're absolutely unique personalities. And when you're talking about angels, like they said, they are the highest order of the lowest group. We're talking about the lowest group of the children of the infinite spirit. So we shouldn't be too surprised if even ones that are in the higher echelons of that lowest group aren't radically different than things that we can understand in terms of the way they feel about things, the way they relate with things. So look what they say. They all have a large capacity for appreciation of the ministrations of the reversion directors. It's like, well, if you remember up there and reading about the reversion directors, and relative to us, we're doing this incredible ascent. We have to try to ascend from the lowliest of places that can be made, a material mortal origin sphere, all the way up to the Isle of Paradise, the geographic center of infinity. We have a very long, steep climb with mind-bogglingly, seemingly endless challenges in front of us to achieve such an incredible feat. It's challenge and challenge and challenge and more challenge. I mean, there's a limit. You have to take a break every once in a while. You can't just go unremitting in that challenge. It'll be too much. You'll break. So you have to take a break. You know, you have to step aside from the challenge. And there's a whole structure set up to give you the relief you need. So as you can back off from that tension, that challenge, let it just relax, and then get your batteries recharged again. So you just, so you're excited and ready to engage the challenge again. They have the same thing. The angels need to step away from the challenge every once in a while. So even beings that by and large are functioning in a horizontal mode rather than ascending like we are initially, they're more stationary ministers, except for the ones, of course, that follow us up, But when they're just functioning in a stationary, in that state, it's you have to take a break from the challenge. So they're spending energy, burning calories, quote unquote, doing all those things in the plane, and they get exhausted. They need to take a break, and the reversion directors help them. So they're just like us in that sense. Together with the messenger hosts of space, remember a lot of those messenger hosts weren't created that way. They're actually angels that moved up into those positions. So we're talking about angels. So they're going to have that issue. As well, the ministering, along with the messenger host, the ministering spirits enjoy seasons of rest and change. Not just rest, but change. It's like, I need to do something different for a little bit. And we'll get the same thing. You're climbing, you get to a certain level, it's like, oh, this is the level where that opportunity that I've always longed for resides. I can take an excursion, I can go off and I can I've always wanted to study dinosaurs on other planets. What's it like pre-human on a planet? I've always been really interested in that. So you spend 1 million years on that, or whatever. There's no time limits. Whatever it takes. We all know that. You can become an astronomer. You can become a star student. You can. There's all kinds of things. You can spend great lengths of time, kind of on a plateau for a while, and then you get back to the climb. And what you begin to recognize is that's not just you want to do that. That's, it's not just for sheer lark of doing something. There's something that needs to be done in the universe at that level. And guess what? You interested in that is the only being in all of creation that can do that. The very thing you've always wanted to do, you discover, is absolutely essential. So, hand meets glove. Okay? That's the nature of the whole universe, scheme. It's not like God doesn't completely understand what's necessary for us to be healthy and happy throughout our whole eternal career. They've dotted every I and crossed every T long before time was. It's all going to be there. Everything that we ever could want out of a perfect God and His perfect creation.
You mean you're saying that when we get up there, there'll be something that is made just for one of us, like each of us? There'll be some special thing that He's made just for us?
For 10,000 years or something, and then it's done, but that's all, it's only needed for that long.
That no other being could do but us?
Right.
That's cool.
Right. It'll always be like, that when we talk about our personality like a puzzle piece, be careful not to think of that in simple destiny terms, where I don't fit in anywhere until finally we get to, future eternity, till we get to the ends of ends. No, you're an evolving puzzle piece. It takes on different shapes as it evolves. And at every point along the way, that particular shape fits in. And there's only one puzzle piece that fits in at that level, and you're it. And then it evolves to the next puzzle.
Like that.
And you fit into that one, and you're the only one that does. You're indispensable. You know, your purposing is indispensable. The only thing that you have to challenge yourself is not to be too animal origin, you know, too anthropomorphic in that thought. It's not like the temperament of yourself that initially came out of that fertilized egg, you know, is the puzzle piece shape. It's your personality, not yourself. So your personality has a place that fits in at every point. The challenge is to get yourself shaped right so that there's an actual puzzle piece, not just a potential puzzle piece, because your personality is just potential puzzle pieces. It's not actual puzzle pieces. And it doesn't somehow crystallize. You know, it engages itself and reforms it into the appropriate shape for that moment in universe history and that place in space. Self-mastery. Now, and if you want to do lots and lots of things, you need to get very, very complete in your self-mastery. There can't be some little dangly part. You know, you have to get a grip on all of it, and it's got to be able to morph like that. And then on a dime, you got to be able to morph it like that, and then morph it like that. Because there's always a particular thing that you need to do with that self. So it's got to be teachable. Yourself, it's a mindful self. Your mind has to stay teachable. You have to let the mind be able to move so that when the more the personality can actually engage it and try to do something with it, try to reform it, it's reformable. If you calcify the self, it doesn't matter how much you want your personality to reform it, it can't. So you have to keep yourself teachable, to keep yourself open. You have to trust God. You have to be courageous. Just go out in a moldable fashion, and not be afraid. It's like, well, if I let myself be moldable, someone might mold me. No, they won't. Not if you are the master. You need to be the master. Be sophistry-proof. Don't let some malignant force mold you. But the solution to that is not to make yourself unmoldable, because then God can't steer a parked car. Yeah. You have to be moldable. Malleable. But that's it. They're just going to give you that one paragraph, a little reminder. So hold on to it firmly, because we're going to jump right into all the details again. Okay. Keep in mind, it stays personal, and it stays always a phenomenon that behind the scenes of what they're immediately telling you, you could understand. There's a social nature, you know, that's always going on in the midst of all these technical details about what their job is and all that. It's not like they don't have social time. They're very social. And in that regard, they're bound to be very, very social, because, you know, where's the spirit of socialization, the spirit of counsel? I mean, that's in that mindful block. When you're talking about angels, you're talking about basically daughters of the mother at some level or in some way. The mothers are the wombs of mind, you know, in any given universe scale, local universe, super universe, central universe, you know, grand universe, whatever. They're the wombs of mind. So the children of that mindful bestower are bound to have a lot of immediacy of association with mind. Or, you know, when we talk about the threefold actuality, individuality, associativity, unity, right? And that, if you think about it that way, and look what they just said, and have an associative capacity far transcending that of human beings. They have a lot of, by nature, a lot of ability to engage the associative aspect of reality, more so than the unity. So think about when you call an angel a spirit being, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, from our perspective, they're not made out of this stuff, so I guess we're going to have to call them made out of spirit substance. But they aren't hyper-unity consciousness. They're more associativity consciousness. Sometimes in vast, you know, unimaginable ways. Like, you know, when they talk about the angels know the number of hairs on your head without counting them. I mean, they just, you know, have a relationship to the mindal domain that is just immediate. They don't have to go down to the individuality, you know, domain and count like we do. The count, you know, the number feeds up into the associative domain, and it's just there for them to acquire. So they don't have to go to that individuality and count. The count comes to them in the associative domain. All right. So now let's jump into the details.
The ministering spirits of the grand universe are classified as follows. 1, Supernaphim. 2, Seconaphim. 3, Teraphim. 4, Omniaphim. 5, Seraphim. 6, Cherubim and Sanabim. 7, midway creatures.
Okay. We've seen a list like this back in the previous paper. What's glaring at you there? It's like, wait a minute, midway creatures? They're not angels. Okay. You know, you're already suspecting that, okay, that probably foundationally, fundamentally, you know, the unrevealed, the lower order of angels is who actually goes in block number 7 there. But they can't, you know, they're not allowed to directly, you know, talk about that and put it into lists like that. But they give you, well, you know, there's the parallel beings that are more on the supreme side than the, you know, infinite spirit side, and parallel, and then down at that level, the midwayers. So they put them in there. And you'll see they've alluded to that here in just a little bit. But catch that and be looking for, I wonder if there's any spot where they might be seeing if I noticed that, or if I, you know, that cut, you know, it's like, wait a minute, that seems a little odd. You know, that one of these things is not like the others, okay? Everyone has, you know, listened to Sesame Street. That should catch your attention. That's different, and, you know, there's something in play there.
The individual members of the angelic orders are not altogether stationary as to personal status in the universe. Angels of certain orders may become paradise companions for a season. Some become celestial recorders. Others ascend to the ranks of the technical advisors. Certain of the cherubim may aspire to seraphic status and destiny, while evolutionary seraphim can achieve the spiritual levels of the ascending sons of God.
Okay, a couple things there. Just, okay, you know, they're just alluding back to all those different orders that moved out of really the ministering spirit and into the messenger host categories, you know, rattling them off there, you know, and also that when they mentioned rest and change, you know, reminding you that's one of the changes we've already read about, become paradise companions for a season, a little change of pace for a while. Then look at that last statement. Did you see what they said there? So we're supposedly talking about what we're going to call spirit beings, from our perspective, and what do they say? While evolutionary seraphim can achieve the spiritual levels of the ascending sons of God. They're trying to rise up to your level of spirit. It's like, well, wait, I thought they were a spirit being, and I was a material being, and I'm going to be a Mirage being next. And but what do you have right now?
Not a
fragment, pure spirit. That's way, way above anything they have in this spirit substance domain. They have a little bit of spiritual energy blended together with material energy into a homogeneous mix, and that's their energy form. Okay, especially if they're a seraphim, so that, you know, they're quite a ways down in the in the structure of energy, the hierarchy of energy. Right, so, you know, but if a seraphim manages to become an ascending seraphim and makes it all the way up, they can actually achieve a transformation of their nature that will allow them to actually get a father fragment, not a thought adjuster. They can't take that kind of father fragment, but a father fragment that will match with them. Now they have a pure spirit component, and they're on eye level with us. They've finally gotten themselves up to where, at least in potential, we were practically when we started. You know, and they don't achieve that until they finally work up through all this stuff and get to paradise. They finally get a father fragment. You know, they might actually join us in the mortal finality corps because they're spiritual enough, those spirit beings. So just notice that. Now, of course, the challenge is now not to let that go to your head. but we're mostly potential. But they look at, you know, they don't look at us just from that temporal perspective. They think, wow, you know, a billion years from now, that's going to be something really cool. I wish I could, you know, achieve that.
Can they see our potential?
The answer is so yes that it boggles our mind. The moment that you were conceived, the moment that sperm cell and that egg cell came together, angels did a projection. They calculated almost everything that you were going to do in this life. I mean, the potential is the last time you wrote a letter, they probably could have calculated the exact sequence of words in that letter you wrote yesterday, say. Went from conception, okay? Because an awful lot of our nature is mathematical, and we have very little personality yet engaging it, very minimally personalized self. It's only that personalized component that's not calculable in advance. The rest of it's just mathematical. You know, your mind, material mind, engaged to this physical structure, you know, that's, you know, synchronized to the DNA, that's all hyper-calculable. I mean, think about what the life carriers do. I mean, you know, they can calculate, you know, how they need to make a single-celled plant and drop it in the ocean so that it becomes the particular kind of will creature they want 500 million years later. Okay. I mean, you know, we're talking about a level of mathematical calculation that we think is impossible. No, it's child's play to them, especially to an angel, where they don't even have to get out a notepad or anything. I mean, they just know it. The calculation is automatic in their consciousness, like they're saying, this incredible associative consciousness. I mean, they calculate all of the basics of your life and send that projection to Divinington. And your adjuster picked you based upon the sequence of words that you were going to write in a letter when you were 52 and everything else, you know. What color your house you were going to like. And, I mean, most of that stuff is just completely mathematical, you know. And that's a challenge right there. To think, well, I think that's all that makes me, you know, unique.
Chris.
Challenge yourself more. Take it up a notch.
You pull those ideas out of this?
Yeah, remember, they tell you point blank that right at conception, that they calculate, you know, all of the basics of your life. I mean, like I said, I mean, there's probably no need to calculate what you're going to write in that letter. But you shouldn't say, well, I don't think they could. Don't be so quick, you know. Who knows just how detailed is they want to calculate details, what they could calculate. The easiest way to appreciate the potential of what they could calculate is just to listen to some of those stories of twins separated at birth, identical twins, who find each other at age 55, only to discover that, you know, their houses are carbon copies of each other. Their husbands have the same names. Their dogs have the same names. All their children have the same names. Their original life is mostly mathematical. Okay. You know, the challenge is starting in such a mathematical state. Can you not falsely exalt that? And say, well, that's me. No, you don't know you. Seek the real you. Don't be satisfied with what just happens naturally, genetically. No matter how different it is from anyone else on the planet, you know, you may be the only person on the planet that can play that really bizarre instrument or whatever that you dreamt up. But that isn't your personality. That's just a really quirky combination of molecules in your DNA. And it leads to that. Your personality is something completely unrecognized and transcendent of that. Your potential is so amazing. Don't ever be satisfied. Constantly challenge yourself to be more unique than you are right now, because that will be making, you know, challenging you to actually actualize personality instead of just rest on your genetic laurels.
I find it fascinating that it's the angels' data stream going to Bennington is what allows the particular adjuster to pick us.
Yeah, I mean, and remember how literal this is. I mean, they don't just look at a document that comes to Bennington and flip through the pages. I mean, they actually get all the information where they can build an artificial you. They build an artificial mind of you. And that adjuster engages it and lives in it, practices being in your mind. I mean, they can create a simulator of you, and they do. There was a simulator Jeanette, you know, long ago on Bennington that her adjuster practiced in. It's like there was a simulator Chris. Okay? I mean, they can make my mind is a mathematical structure that they can program into their simulator, and it'll work just like it is right now for that adjuster.
In that case, can they also sort out the individuals who will reject?
No, because rejection is personal.
Person.
Yeah. No one knows. Not, you know, no one that thinks temporally knows who is going to choose iniquity. Kind of getting back to the angels, remember how devoted they are as ministers. Even if Don Green does choose iniquity in this life. Just to pick on you. Your angels won't leave you. They'll keep ministering to you, even though they know there's nothing real there anymore. They saw the pilot light go out. You know, they can see, they can't see the adjuster directly, but they can see mind really well. And mind glows differently when an adjuster is in it. They can see a different luminosity to your mind. So when that luminosity drops, they know the adjuster's left. They know you've already been judged, as it were. But they don't change their ministry to you one iota. They still minister to you. Yeah. So they're very devoted. And that almost seems machine-like again. It's like, I mean, what are you doing? You know?
Duty.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of reasons. We don't need to go into that right now. But it's just, you know they love you that much. That they'll even minister to you when you're gone. I mean, you're not really there anymore.
What do you mean by minister to us?
Well, again, when you're talking about, let's skip over some of the kind of more fuzzy stuff. I mean, just get directly to when a guardian angel actually becomes a guardian of destiny. So when you become a third circler, now you've got something very definitive you can think about what their ministration is. They're ministering to you relative to your destiny. They are trying to help you to have experiences that foster a relationship to your destiny. They are trying to help you to keep your eyes, you know, lifted up and looking towards the future. You know, if you start to, you know, drift down, staring at the floor, or even starting to stare at your belly button, you know, becoming introspective, they're going to try. It's like, no, lift your head up. keep your eyes on the goal. They're going to try to work, you know, help you. You need all kinds of help to get from here to paradise.
You mean like if you were starting to get depressed or something, and then they would make something happen.
Well, again,
that you would get all of a sudden get some kind of hope again. Well, and start looking up.
This is where you don't know really how to think about it, because again, they're not so much concerned about your mortal life. I mean, your mortal life is like that to them. Okay. Again, like I said, this is where you can. It's hard to know what to think when you haven't gotten to the level where you really are more destiny oriented. But once you get to that third circular day, domain and beyond, they're not going to be very much worried about those momentary passing issues. They're just going to focus on the big picture and down the road. They know by the time you get to there, if you have a low point emotionally, you'll work through that. They don't have to try to somehow help you through that. You can get yourself through that. But the question, what do they do with three-year-old children? I don't know. It's hard to know. They don't tell you. It's obviously a violation of the revelatory mandate to talk about such things. But at the very least, you have the statement that they aren't there to listen to your prayers and respond to your prayers. They do give that amazing little tidbit that challenges all of the history of human thought about angels. When you read about Guardians of Destiny up in paper 113, they're not concerned with prayers. So that whole idea, I've got a material issue that's bugging me, I'm praying about it, my angels just help me with it. They seem to be saying, not too likely. That's probably a rationalization on your part. That's not the way they roll. They just tell you point blank on that because they know humans have gotten really caught up in that. You get fixated on that. And even though you're praying, what you're doing is you're becoming so earthly minded, you're no heavenly good. If the only thing that you're ever praying about is what's going on, in the animal moment that you're in, that's no good to heaven. What can God do with that? God is, doesn't exist in that little temporal moment. He exists in eternity. But again, like I said, that's a long ways down the road that they really talk about you. And that's why I said they gave you a little paragraph to remind you of some personal things, because now we're going to talk about everything but you. We're just not going to talk about, well, what about me? It's not in here. At least not the me now. Eventually we'll get to the me in Havona, but okay. So you have to just set your personal, concerns aside for a second and just try to engage all the stuff that angels do. Put angels in a bigger context. The universe is not all about the ascension scheme, and it's certainly not all about me. Angels have a lot of things to do. And that's more what we're going to be reading about immediately here. All right.
The seven orders of ministering spirits, as revealed, are grouped for presentation in accordance with their functions of greatest importance to ascending creatures.
No, I've got to just stop. I can't read one. Did you know something? The seven orders of ministering spirits. Why did they throw revealed. Up as revealed?
Time to notice something.
Right. Let's see. In other words, the actual seven orders, the seventh are the lesser angels, the unrevealed angels. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they relieve it. Right.
And you'll see, they even add to that here in just a little bit.
That's good.
But then the other thing is, notice just how they were the rest of that. They're grouped for presentation in accordance with their functions of greatest importance to ascending creatures. Remember, the whole revelation is just about the ascension scheme. Everything is geared to, talking about, how these beings relate to the ascension scheme, or can't talk about those, they don't have anything to do with the ascension scheme, so keep that in mind. If they were revealing another aspect, it would take on a different flavor than what you're about to read. Yeah, but if it's going to be ascension scheme, there's going to be some verticality. They're basically going to give you something parallel to the verticality of your ascension scheme.
Number one, the ministering spirits of the central universe. The three orders of Supernovum serve in the Paradise Havona system. Primary or Paradise Supernovum are created by the Infinite Spirit. The secondary and tertiary orders serving in Havona are respectively the offspring of the master spirits and of the spirits of the circuits. Two, the ministering spirits of the super universes, the Sakonophim, the Tertiophim, and the Omniophim. Sakonophim, the children of the reflective spirits, variously serve in the seven super universes. Tertiophim, of origin in the infinite spirit, are eventually dedicated to the liaison service of the Creator's sons and the Ancients of Days. Omniophim are created concertedly by the Infinite Spirit and the seven supreme executives, and they are the exclusive servants of the latter. The discussion of these three orders forms the subject of a succeeding narrative in this series.
And just let me just say right here, remember this spot in the book. You know, when you're reading somewhere and they say Tertiophim, and you go, now I said, who was it that, you know, who is, gives rise to Tertiophim? And you're trying to find the Tertiophim section. I mean, you got this nice little synopsis of just the basic issues right here that you can turn to, beginning at paper 26. So just, you know, try to make a mental note that you can come back to. This is your little touchstone, your little sort of table of contents, little index or whatever on the angels. And, you know, like I said, I mean, all those are going to be dealt with when we get to the super universe angelic paper. We're going to deal with the tertiary and the secondary Supernovim coming up in this paper, and then the primary Supernovim are in the next paper. And then, of course, you know, when we do this next one, the local universe, that's, you got to get up to the local universe part before you get the next block here.
Three, the ministering spirits of the local universes embrace the seraphim and their assistants, the cherubim. With these offspring of a universe mother spirit, mortal ascenders have initial contact. The midway creatures of nativity on the inhabited worlds are not really of the angelic orders proper, though often functionally grouped with the ministering spirits. Their story, with an account of the seraphim and cherubim, is presented in those papers dealing with the affairs of your local universe.
See, so they basically see, so they haven't, I mean, they haven't just faked it or anything. I mean, there's a validity to the list they gave you. Okay, the angelic orders proper would have the lower angels in there, but so it's not so much a list of I don't know, maybe an existential list. Let's just say it that way. Here's the angels that exist in these seven orders. It's a functional list, and it's valid to put them in the seventh place as a functional list. Okay, but technically, right. Right. You know who goes there. All right.
All orders of the angelic host are devoted to the various universe services, and they minister in one way or another to the higher orders of celestial beings. But it is the Supernovim, Sakonophim, and Seraphim who, in large numbers, are employed in the furtherance of the ascending scheme of progressive perfection for the children of time. Functioning in the central super and local universe verses, they form that unbroken chain of spirit ministers which has been provided by the Infinite Spirit for the help and guidance of all who seek to attain the Universal Father through the Eternal Son.
So they're trying to give you, initially, if you're a brand new reader, this is your eyes are glazing over. They're trying to simplify it. It's like, okay, so start off, they're saying, I mean, set the Omniophim, the Tertiophim aside for a second, don't worry about the primary, secondary, tertiary, just think Supernovim, Sakonophim, Seraphim. You have three different types, because there's three different levels. You need something in the central universe, something in the super universe, something in the local universe. So just a simple vertical structure, Supernovim, below them Sakonophim, below them Seraphim. So they want you to anchor that, and then they'll go on and give you more details.
Supernovim are limited in spirit polarity, regarding only one phase of action, that with the Universal Father. They can work singly except when directly employing the exclusive circuits of the Father. When they are in power reception on the Father's direct ministry, Saparnapha must voluntarily associate in pairs to be able to function. Sakanapham are likewise limited and in addition must work in pairs in order to synchronize with the circuits of the Eternal Son. Seraphim can work singly as discrete and localized personalities, but they are able to encircle only when polarized as liaison pairs. When such spirit beings are associated as pairs, the one is spoken of as complemental to the other. Complemental relationships may be transient. They are not necessarily of a permanent nature.
So they give you one little physics paragraph here about the seraphim. Okay, so what's the basic thing they're trying to convey? They're trying to remind you of what they mentioned up in the beginning there, that you can understand how these beings function in day-to-day life. They're not some sort of a magical energizer, you know, bunny. Okay, their batteries run down. Okay, they have inside them a quote unquote spirit polarity. They have a differential within their nature that powers them. They do work literally, you know, that drains that differential. And it has to be recharged. Their batteries, quote unquote, have to be recharged. They have a literal physics, you know, they're a literal energy being. And they're doing, you know, they notice talk about circuits. I mean, they're trying to say, think of it very literally. You know, they need to be able to flow in a circuit, and you know, if the battery is dead, no flow happens. They have to be able to power their encirclement, okay? Their flow in this circuit, let me say it that way. And they're saying, remember what we told in the previous paragraph, you have this simple hierarchy, and you can see this hierarchy by this, by thinking about their energy nature. So you take the highest type, the Saparnapham, okay, and maybe here just to, so you have a visualization. You know, if you look on the psychic circles in the sevenfold, just think about when you're thinking about God the sevenfold, think about the sevenfold creators. Who's on top? The Universal Father. Down below, the Eternal Son. Next down, the Infinite Spirit or the conjoint actor. You know, the three persons functioning out in the universes are functioning through the God the sevenfold. They're in a hierarchy in God the sevenfold. They're not all in the same plane, like you might think of them in some ways on paradise. Okay, when they're reaching out, there's a hierarchy to them. So it's in the God the sevenfold expression of those three persons that there's these circuits that these angels are engaging. You know, so it's the Father's circuit in the sevenfold they're engaging, the Son's circuit in the sevenfold. So there's a hierarchy to those circuits, and there's a hierarchy of these beings, and they match up. Yeah, there a Saparnapham has enough polarity, enough differential within one of them that they can engage the circuits of the Infinite Spirit and the Eternal Son. But they don't have enough polarity to go up and engage and strike step with that higher differential in the Father's circuit. Just set that aside for a second. They can't do that all by themselves. They don't have enough differential by themselves to attune to the Father's big differential circuit. So yeah, they have to get two of them together. So you have a super additive consequence. They combine their differentials. There's a super additive differential that's big enough that they can lock into the Father's circuit. So in and of themselves, they can lock onto the lower two, but they can't do it all by themselves. They can't reach high enough by themselves to get up to the Father's. You go down to the next order, the Sakanapham. Okay? They can reach the Infinite Spirits, But by themselves, they don't have enough differential in themselves to match the differential in the sun's circuit. That's too big a differential for them to match. So they have to bring two of them together and get a super additive consequence. So you have a bigger differential that can match the sun's bigger differential or the father's bigger differential. Takes two of them to lock in. With the seraphim, go to the lowest group, in and of themselves, they can't even engage the infinite spirits. That's too high for them. That's too much differential for them. So it always takes two of them and some super additive consequence for them to plug into that circuit, to have a matching spirit polarity, to have a matching width of differential, to synchronize with that power level. So they're just pointing out, I mean, it's very literal. This hierarchy is not just because, well, you guys got to work down there. And no, I mean, they're built that way. They just are that way. Their physics is in a hierarchy. Right? And the energy nature of their form is in that hierarchy. Okay. And then that last bit about, we know we speak of them as complemental, and you can talk about them positive, negative, for instance. So that just that, again, using that battery analogy and the way they talk about it. But complemental relationships may be transient. They are not necessarily a permanent nature. Well, how does it, we've mentioned this a couple times already. Angels, if they become ascenders, they can go through a process on Seraphington where they are elevated above their initial nature and become fully independent individuals. In a sense, you can kind of think about what we're saying. The two together are a super additive consequence. It sort of brings them both up to that super additive level, that bi-unification process that we mentioned. See, so it just brings them both up, and then they're independent pairs at that higher level. And now they can just always function independently. So they can be changed, be notched up like this. Just the way they worded it so general, there must be a zillion different ways that they don't reveal it, related to, but they at least, give you that one example. So that's what they're referring to. And that fits in with, the more you read about the angels, the more you discover just how amazingly malleable they are in many ways. They can, we already saw that they can move up out of the ministering ranks and take on these various messenger host roles, and those aren't, they have to have a different nature to be one of those. It isn't just that they're doing a different thing with the same nature. They've evolved into a different nature to be a technical advisor or whatever. Okay. So they're very malleable, but that's, we said they had a lot of relationship to mind. We think of spirit and matter as being more the rigid substances, the substances, okay? Whereas mind, we don't want to think of as a substance. It's more like a fluid. It's more, it's an energy. You want to just say energy. So just not surprising that these beings might be very malleable in their nature. And they could take on a lot of different roles within their ranks, move into other ranks, whatnot. Okay.
These brilliant creatures of light are sustained directly by the intake of the spiritual energy of the primary circuits of the universe. Urantia mortals must obtain light energy through the vegetative incarnation, but the angelic hosts are encircuited. They have food that you know not. They also partake of the circulating teachings of the marvelous Trinity teacher sons. They have a reception of knowledge and an intake of wisdom much resembling their technique of assimilating the life energies.
Okay, more fun stuff. First of all, great example. They never miss an opportunity to take a little snippet out of the Bible and use it in some way. If you're familiar, in the Gospel of John, when it's with the Nalda at the well whole scenario, Jesus speaks of himself like this. I have food you know not. Well, let's just pull it out of that context. We're going to use it. That's a great sequence of words to use right here. So they did. Because remember, they're told to do that. If you can find a sequence of words that humans can relate to, you can use in a more appropriate place, do it. So they did it there. Grabbed that little snippet. Okay, so you know, think about us. You know, mortals, Urantia mortals must obtain light energy through the vegetative incarnation. In other words, you know, we all know photosynthesis. Okay, I mean, energy is a differential. You know, in the book, when they say energy, they mean there's some kind of differential. Something, you know, is has a polarity to it. It's not the same everywhere. So you can at least conceptually imagine two probes, you know, one poked here and one poked here, and they don't feel the same thing. There's going to be a differential between those two probes. That's an energy. If it doesn't have that, it's a force. If it's the same everywhere, it's a force. So photons, we talk about them as energy. Well, it's because there's a differential there. There's an energy in a little packet there, a little unit of energy that strikes a plant, and that photon energy gets converted into chemical energy in the plant. You've got a differential that's stored in the chemistry of the plant. And then you eat, and we either eat the plant directly or an animal eats the plant. You know, it gets into the, you know, the that differential, that chemical differential is in the meat. We eat the meat. I mean, one way or another, we get that chemical differential and we use it. It powers us. Nothing happens unless there's a differential that you can grab a hold of and get something to flow from one pole to the other. And that's what powers you and them. They have a differential. They don't get it in this crude way like we do. They just are plugged into the energy circuits in the cosmos. So they're doing all their work. Their batteries are getting drained and drained and drained. They're running out of juice. They can't do their job anymore. So they get more input. They get hungry, as it were. See, you know, they need to have input in it. Built, you know, recharges the battery, they've got the differential again, and off they go. So so that's, you know, just again a reminder of how, even though it's obviously a lot fancier than, you know, eating lettuce, what they're doing, it's the same basic idea. So you got a differential, and it gets drained. But the really amazing thing there is, okay, we didn't, you know, we've read a whole bunch about the Trinity Teacher Sons. And they mentioned in passing that the Trinity Teacher Sons help out the angels. But look at that. They also partake of the circulating teachings of the marvelous Trinity Teacher Sons. They have a reception of knowledge and an intake of wisdom much resembling their technique of assimilating the life energies. That's an interesting. So the Trinity Teacher Sons, okay, they're Trinity origin. Giving you another little clue here that because of that Trinity origin, you know, when we think about the Trinity as, in many ways, as the whole, the mother coming from the Trinity is the individuality of the whole, this ubiquitous nature. They seem to be saying that what the Trinity teachers have to teach, the knowledge and wisdom that they would like to bestow, is just in the ubiquity of, I guess, the mother presence in a universe. And these angels just pull it right out. They don't have to walk up and, you know, or sit down in a class with a Trinity teacher son up at the podium, you know. I mean, they just draw it out of the environment. It's the Trinity teacher sons, apparently, see, are their knowledge and wisdom is just abroad in the universe. It's circulating. That's a pretty, and so that's kind of a science fiction-like thing we've always imagined. Like, wow, if only we could just, like, have a mechanism we could stick on our head, you know, and we would just pull the knowledge and wisdom, you know, out of the whatever, you know, and it would just be in my head. It's like, well, that's the way the angels do it. They literally do it that way. You just pull it out of the environment, just like they pull their battery charging out of the environment. Cool stuff. All right. So now we're going to give us a little preliminary on the SupernaFem. So they haven't gotten to the point of like you see when you go to the next section of getting into the real nitty gritty details. So we got a little bit more introduction yet here.
I was going to ask you, this is the brilliant creatures of light. This is not a light we can see.
And we're starting to recognize when they say that, it's like, well, what kind of luminosity are they talking about? Are they talking about spiritual luminosity, mind luminosity, or physical luminosity? You know, they're talking about photons. looks like it's maybe more of the intellectual luminosity sense. I mean, we call them spirit beings, but you get the sense that you should maybe think of it more in that kind of energy radiance. That's the way where they will glow very brightly. When other beings look at them and go, wow, look at the radiance of that mind. In such a lowly package. Even seraphim, do some really amazing mindful things that other beings are just, beside themselves trying to understand. How do they do that? I wish I had a mind like that. So, that would be my sense, that think of it as, maybe spirit mind luminosity, kind of mind luminosity foundationally with a little spirit luminosity thrown in.
Two, the mighty SupernaFem. The SupernaFem are the skilled ministers to all types of beings who sojourn on paradise and in the central universe. These high angels are created in three major orders, primary, secondary, and tertiary. Primary SupernaFem are the exclusive offspring of the conjoint creator. They divide their ministry about equally between certain groups of the paradise citizens and the ever-enlarging core of ascendant pilgrims. These angels of the Eternal Isle are highly efficacious in furthering the essential training of both groups of paradise dwellers. They contribute much that is helpful to the mutual understanding of these two unique orders of universe creatures, the one being the highest type of divine and perfect will creature, and the other, the perfected evolution of the lowest type of will creature in all the universe of universes.
That would be the beings in the room. remember the basic idea of what's going on in Avona from in terms of what's revealed. You not only have one-time mortals ascending upward through Avona, but you have paradise citizens descending in parallel, reciprocal, down through. So, there's two ascension schemes going on. One that we actually think of as going up, and another one that we think of as going down, but for the paradise citizens, they're going up when they're going, quote-unquote, down. They're starting with paradise and building upon that. They're going upward in their nature as they go, from 1 to 7 in the Havona circuits. And they're helping with making sure that the twain shall meet, basically, helping out with getting that, getting some super additive consequence going on between those two flows. And you go, well, why them? Oh, wait a minute, two flows, the association between the two. Oh, beings that are very adept at fostering the associativity aspect of things as opposed to the individuality on one side or the other. So very natural, the association there, they're fostering it.
Right. But when it asks, when it says conjoint creator, is that the Father and the Son?
No, no.
Okay, who's the conjoint creator?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you have, yeah, we do, yeah, you can call him the conjoint actor sometimes.
Yeah, the infinite spirit.
Right. So the third person, sometimes you call, you know, the infinite spirit, sometimes the conjoint actor, if you're thinking impersonal, personal, in that order. Other times, you'll call him the conjoint creator. Why? Well, sometimes you call the Father the universal creator, and the Son the co-creator or the coordinate creator, depending on what you're talking about, and then the third person is the conjoint creator. So if you're thinking of all of them as creators,
okay,
then you call them creators like that. So, they, so you can see why they did. I mean, they're, the third person is doing what? The first person is creating the primary third of him, supernal of him, so they're, you know, just using the name.
The work of the primary supernifum is so unique and distinctive that it will be separately considered in the succeeding narrative. Secondary supernifum are the directors of the affairs of ascending beings on the seven circuits of Avona. They are equally concerned in ministering to the educational training of numerous orders of paradise citizens who sojourn for long periods on the world circuits of the central creation. But we may not discuss this phase of their service.
However, one can deduce the beginnings of it. You know, we've alluded to that before. You know, when you go to actually start unpacking the details of the central universe, and you start thinking about all of the specifics that they tell you about the secondary supernifim fostering ascenders like you through the circuits of Avona, if you've got enough of the picture, you can see what the reciprocal has to be. I mean, you can't figure out a lot of details, obviously, but you can figure out basically what the secondary supernifim must be helping the paradise citizens do on each circuit. You know, the general thing of what they're doing on the circuit is they, because they're trying to foster them going down through that hierarchy. And just, you know, so it's an easy thing to kind of just flip it and see, well, the reciprocal of that would be.
I find that really interesting. They can't discuss it, but it's kind of woven in there if you can ferret it out.
Yeah, and you see, if you, when we get to the secondary supernifim,
they intend to be that way, or they just sort of slipped
off. No, you'll see that when we get to the, you know, they say they're, but we may not discuss this phase of their service, but then when you get to the secondary supernifim, every once in a while they throw in a little hint about, you know, ministering to the descending. And so, right, I mean, they give you all the little tidbits scattered here and there that you need so that you can deduce, you know, the basics. They want you to do that. They want you to not just stick with what they could directly reveal and treat it like a sacred text that just has to be memorized. You know, it's not a religious text. It's a philosophic text. So they want you to engage it and start doing something with it. So they give you all the pieces that you need, because you don't have mode of consciousness, they give you what you need so that if you are ready, you can put the pieces together and figure it out. You know, you can figure out that the creative mother agencies of the ancients of the days are just that, mother agencies, and, you know, what level of the mother, you know, they're functioning, they're manifesting, and et cetera. And it's all there that you can deduce. At least, you know, you can deduce the parts that have some relevancy to understanding where you fit into the picture. They don't even remotely give you something in the book that will allow you to deduce something that's not, you know, remotely related to you. It's just not there at all, not even a hint. See, so you're appreciating the revelatory limitations. It's not like they were told you have to construct this so there's no way they can figure out anything about the secondary supernifim relating to the descending paradise citizens. You know, that wasn't in the revelatory limitations. The limitation said you can't directly talk about it. Give them the hints that they need so that they can figure it out, discover it on their own. Yeah.
There are seven types of these high angels, each of origin in one of the seven master spirits, and in nature pattern accordingly. Collectively, the seven master spirits create many different groups of unique beings and entities, and the individual members of each order are comparatively uniform in nature. But when these same seven spirits create individually, the resulting orders are always sevenfold in nature. The children of each master spirit partake of the nature of their creator and are accordingly diverse from the others. Such is the origin of the second Supernatum, and the angels of all seven created types function in all channels of activity open to their entire order, chiefly on the seven circuits of the central and divine universe.
Okay, just to reemphasize, we've mentioned this several times in the recent papers. Some beings are created where their nature is identical to start with. Other beings are created where their natures are very different to start with. There are some celestial beings that are born equal. But there's also a lot of celestial beings that are born like us, not equal. They're born very much not equal. They're created equal, but they're not born equal. And now, whether or not their natures are the same to start with or their natures are different to start with, obviously both of them are experiential beings, and they go forward and nurture begins to, you know, create differences. So all beings are going to have differences of the individuality of their selfhood that results from nurture, from engaging the experiential domain and having differences of experience. You know, their energy form will be different because of that. It's literal. It's not that they have different memories, you know, only. They're literally different. But some of them, you know, have quite a bit of difference just to begin with. You can see here they're pointing out, even though they start out with a lot of differences, they can function in a lot of different roles. Other angels, it's not so. I mean, they have a certain nature like this, and they can't do that job over there. They're made just for this job, and they're not morphable over there. There's all kinds of differences. Just notice that as you study these, you know, just about every variation you can think of is in play in that nature nurture. Even if their natures are identical to start with, some group of beings, every one of them has an absolutely unique personality. Yeah. Now, if they were not beings, if they were entities, and they're just made, you have a group of identical entities, well, there's no personality to differentiate them. And they might not even be something that really acquires experience even that could start to differentiate. So it would just, they would stay all, you know, interchangeable forever. And just, you know, just every variation you can think of, there's some beings, you know, or entities that they're like that. But definitely, you know, again, don't ever lose sight of the fact that no matter how much some beings might, their selves might be very similar or even identical, their personalities are absolutely unique. So, you know, that's going on. You know, when that being does that exact same job, there is a personality differential in play. It's not going to be, it might be actually the same, but it won't be really the same. It'll be a difference. Okay.
Each of the seven planetary circuits of Avona is under the direct supervision of one of the seven spirits of the circuits. Themselves, the collective, hence uniform, creation of the seven master spirits. Though partaking of the nature of the third source and center, these seven subsidiary spirits of Avona were not a part of the original pattern universe. They were in function after the original eternal creation, but long before the times of Grand Fonda. They undoubtedly appeared as a creative response of the master spirits to the emerging purpose of the Supreme Being, and they were discovered in function upon the organization of the grand universe. The infinite spirit and all of his creative associates as universe coordinators seem abundantly endowed with the ability to make suitable creative responses to the simultaneous developments in the experiential deities and in the evolving universes.
There's that malleability again, that flexibility, that, what do we call that? Value of life, the meaning of life, adaptability. They have a lot of adaptability, right? The, you know, the meaning of life, that associative block, you know, it's inherently has that potential of adaptability built into it. You're seeing that. They have a lot, it's a lot of adaptability coming from the third person, you know, all the, being the creatures of the third person. Now, here's some snippets about the circuit spirits that didn't get mentioned when we talked about them before. Remember, they're amongst those supreme spirits. And the circuit spirits, remember, are not beings. You know, don't think of them as persons. They're circuit spirits, seven of them, one for each of the circuits of Avona, that Trinity domain. There aren't seven because there's seven master spirits. They're not created individually. They result from the super additive consequence of the relationship of the seven master spirits. It's actually the sevenfold spirit that's, you know, I mean, collective, see, creation. It's the sevenfold spirit that's actually involved with the infinite spirit and bringing them into existence. But look at that. Now, that's an interesting little tidbit. We're seeing the reciprocal thing. So you have initially, when you don't have the super universes, you know, or, of course, the outer space levels either, you know, anything in them, all you have is Havona, or the central universe, let's just say that. All you have is a central universe. The moment that they brought the seven super universes into existence, there was a reciprocal thing that happened, a bunch of reciprocal things that happened in the central universe. In particular, as soon as you lay out the seven super universes, you have to lay out the reflective mother spirits. Okay, to be the wombs of each of those seven super universes. There's a reciprocal group of beings to those reflective mother spirits. The circuit spirits come into existence in Havona. Those are reciprocal beings. Reflective mother spirits on one side, circuit spirits on the other side. And so, I mean, before we get into the detail there, just notice that that's what's going on here in general. All of this, you know, in general, you should think of angels as daughters of the mother. Even when they say these angels are coming from the master spirits, it's like, well, they're not mothers. They're reflective mother spirits of the mothers. Yeah. At these higher levels, it's not as immediately definitive like it is down at the local universe level where you have Creator Son and he's all over here and the Creator Mother Spirit, and she's all over here, you know, and she makes Seraphim. Up in those higher levels, it's just this complex system. You have the infinite spirit connected to the paradise trinity, like we've talked about. You have that fundamental relationship connecting the infinite spirit to the trinity. Okay, and all the beings that result from that relationship are in some measure within that collective construct of that relationship of the between the infinite spirit and the paradise trinity. And where there is the paradise trinity, there's the source of mother deity. Where there is the infinite spirit, there's the infinite mother spirit. It's a wash in mother nature. So what you're really seeing is there's various creator beings in this system that's all awash in mother nature. Sometimes the mother nature is a little bit more localizable and condensed, like reflective mother spirits, but it's all awash in it. And out of that mother nature comes, you know, or that really Trinity-rooted nature, comes daughters, comes angels. You know, even from non-persons, like the circuit spirits, that potential for mother to make daughter can come through the circuit spirits. It can come through the master spirits, because they're both in this system. Okay, so that's what's going on. And because it's the mother source at those higher levels is not as in ways we think is not so direct. Like, you know, here's a creative mother spirit, and here's her children, here's her daughters. The angels at the higher levels are a little more he-like she's than the angels at the lower levels, which are very definitively she-like she's. And what do I mean by that? I mean that they're all daughters, but when they function, are they more intimately involved in facilitating God as immanence? You know, the mother, you know, the within expression of God, she like she? Or are they a little bit more about bringing some injection into that? You know, they have a little bit more of a tinge of God of transcendence in their mission as a she. So they're a little bit more of a he like she. So is it transcendence, you know, or immanence that sort of is the main mode that they're in? I mean, you saw that, you talk about angels engaging the Father's circuits even. So there's obviously potential for some he-like functioning. That, just think of that, you know, that there's going to be always be a tendency for a supernaphim. You know, we have a primary supernaphim because of the rebellion functioning as our chief of seraphim. So we have a more he-like, you know, angel in charge, you know, then instead of a seraphim being the chief of seraphim. You know, so it's a little bit more, okay, we need to inject in, you know, we can't just let this work out within. You know, God of transcendence is stepping in a little bit more. We're going to, you know, set down some specifics here. They just always, and so when you read about the what the primary supernaphim says about the possibilities of Jesus coming again, or Machaventa assuming his planetary prince role, that primary supernaphim always has biased in his speculations to a more father-like, you know, let's just, you know, cut through all the crap and just forget about the whole time thing. We're just gonna let's just do fiat. You know, he's like, I want it any hour or, you know, or day. You know, let's forget about letting it work out through, you know, skip over all that stuff. Let's just bring in absoluteness. Let's bring in the Father absolute. Let's solve it all. Okay, now let's move on. The problem with that is it's not a magical universe. And so conceptually we say, oh, I like that. But experientially you may not like that, because pain and suffering are essential to progressive evolution. I mean, God isn't going to magically eliminate the differential that has to be crossed. The question is, are you going to cross that differential spread out over a long period of time, or spread out over almost no time? You know, do you want all the pain in a short period of time, or the same amount of pain spread out over a long period of time? It's like, well, I don't want any pain at all. Well, that's not an option. That's not an option. Right. And we know that when you start talking about that sort of father-like injection, you know, we were talking about that in the previous paper. Yeah. You know, you have divine executioners in play and trumpets and, you know, okay. All right. Okay. But anyway, you see they refer to them as she's, but just, you know, remember that there's a hierarchy here, and it has that, there's a little differential in the flavor of their she-ness. Let's see, anything else? You know, you got to love it. They were discovered in function. Well, would you look at that? You know, they were discovered in function upon the organization of the grand universe. You know, they're all watching, you know, the super universe is being formed. It's like, whoa, what's happening here? You know, and all of a sudden everything is changing inside of, you know, the central universe. And suddenly there's these presences, you know, throughout the circuits that weren't there before. You know, and the Havona natives are suddenly experiencing this relationship in their mind that they didn't have before. Remember, they tell you the circuit spirits engage the minds of the Havona natives in a way that's not that dissimilar to the way a thought adjuster engages your mind. So suddenly there's this spirit presence, you know, in their minds there. So that's what they're talking about. They were discovered in function. And the same thing happens, you know, the next big event is when Grand Fonda gets there. I mean, that indicates that the super universe has achieved a new actuality that wasn't present before. It's a place now that a being can make it from bottom to top in. And the central universe reflects that. A whole bunch of things change in the central universe to match reciprocally the new super universe level.
It's a status.
So there's this constant reciprocal balance between the two. And in terms of developmental and evolutionary sense, and then also just every moment and functionally, there's always whatever's going on out here as a reciprocal thing in there, and they're intimately linked reflectively, you know, in this reciprocal way. Let's see, is there anything else there? No, I mean the other stuff, like I said, if you get into the greater details about unpacking the pattern universe, you can. You know, you can talk about these details of how the circuit spirits really relate to the infinite spirit and things, you know, and they just sort of in passing allude to it in places here. Yeah. All right, the other group.
Tertiary Supernatum take origin in these seven spirits of the circuits. Each one of them on the separate Avona circles is empowered by the infinite spirit to create a sufficient number of high seraphic ministers of the tertiary order to meet the needs of the central universe. While the circuit spirits produced comparatively few of these angelic ministers prior to the arrival in Avona of the Pilgrims of Time, the seven master spirits did not even begin the creation of secondary Supernatum until the landing of Grand Fonda. As the older of the two orders, the tertiary Supernatum will therefore receive first consideration.
Well, that's seniority.
Tenured.
just notice that curious little thing. It's like, what does it mean? Empowered by the infinite spirit to create. Like I said, you can understand that literally when you think about the structure of this relationship between the Paradise Trinity and the infinite spirit. And so here you see it. And the master spirits haven't made a single secondary Supernatum until Grand Fonda wakes up on the pilot world, and then all of a sudden, boom, there's secondary Supernatum.
Here's a word we haven't seen before. Superaphic.
Super. Let's see, where is it there?
Sort of right in the middle.
Oh, yeah, you're right, yeah.
Super. Number of high superaphic ministers.
Or seraphic, too, you know, they do that, too. They have to coin these new words of parallel seraphic, because of course that's all they're doing. You know, they're just taking seraphim and they're playing off of it and coining new words. You know, we didn't have anything except seraphim and cherubim. So, okay, we'll go with that and we'll just create a parallel sequence of words. And, you know, just like they did, we had Ancient of Days and say, like, well, okay, we'll work with that. We'll make it Ancients of Days and then we'll just create a parallel set off of it. Yeah. So they just coined tertiophim and omniophim and supernophim. And, you know they're, I mean, you know, if you're a purist about language, you know, you're going to scream at such, you know, but they do the same thing with deck. You know, they take what's not really a suffix in Hebrew, you know, Melchizedek. It's really tzedek, you know, is a word. They say, well, let's pretend that that last part is a suffix. And let's just tack it on to other things like chronal deck and Norlacia deck and, you know.
Yeah. Deck of halls.
They're playing with it. Now, they didn't do that one. So, yeah, you can't be, you know, too stuck up on this sort of stuff. You gotta let them go, you know, let them have some poetic license here with the language a little bit. All right, so that's it for the overview, and then, yeah, I mean, this is pretty straightforward stuff. So let's why don't we just go ahead and run through these tertiary Supernatum here.
Three, the tertiary Supernatum. These servants of the seven master spirits are the angelic specialists of the various circuits of Avona, and their ministry extends to both the ascending pilgrims of time and the descending pilgrims of eternity. On the billion study worlds of the perfect central creation, your superaphic associates of all orders will be fully visible to you. There, you will all be, in the highest sense, fraternal and understanding beings of mutual contact and sympathy. You will also fully recognize and exquisitely fraternize with the descending pilgrims, the paradise citizens, who traverse these circuits from within outward, entering Havona through the pilot world of the first circuit and proceeding outward to the seventh.
Just, you know, one little thing to think about there, Seton. You know, you're augmenting your nature as you go from the seventh to the first. They're augmenting theirs, and so and when you actually meet on a circuit, you can relate to each other.
Cross-fertile.
Right. There's a commonality that both of you have achieved.
Yeah.
You know, you wonder about. I mean, if I'm on the seventh circuit, you know, can I? How much relationship do I have to a paradise citizen that's just on the first circuit?
You know.
They may not. I don't know. they aren't specific, but it's, you know, you may not even be able to see them yet. I don't know. You know, but once you're on the same circuit together, you have something in common, and you can see each other. You can relate to each other.
You know? Hey, you've just come from where I'm going. But so have you.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So, you know. I've said it a million times, but, you know, make yourself think about the literalness of what's going on, you know, and just so that you can, it's easier to remember it if you start thinking about it and have a literal relationship to it, because it's a millions and millions of words, you know, it'll never stay in your head if you just let it, you know, so flow through.
Descending pilgrims, they're of paradise origin.
Right.
So they didn't enter Havona until Grand Fonda.
Yeah, the moment that Grand Fonda stepped on the pilot world of the Seventh Circuit, the first paradise citizen stepped on the pilot world of the first.
Did they give a name for that guy?
What was that?
Because we have Grand Fonda.
Yeah, right? We don't have a name for that guy, huh?
Right.
I hadn't thought about that. That's true.
The ascending pilgrims from the seven super universes passed through Havona in the opposite direction, entering by way of the pilot world of the seventh circuit and proceeding inward. There is no time limit set on the progress of the ascending creatures from world to world and from circuit to circuit, just as no fixed span of time is arbitrarily assigned to residents on the Marantia worlds. But whereas adequately developed individuals may be exempted from sojourn on one or more of the local universe training worlds, no pilgrim may avoid passing through all seven of the Havona circuits of progressive spiritualization.
Yeah, because there is no substitute out in the super universes. And no matter what you do or how long you do it,
yeah.
You know, it has not the slightest overlap with what goes on in the central universe. If for no other reason, just think of it like I was saying. Everything is the reciprocal there. Doesn't matter how much you get of this. None of it of this is like that.
Yeah. I think I got a name for the guy. Von Grande.
Von Grande. It's the reciprocal, yes. Ay, ay, ay. Picturesque. Notice that they did remind you that about that whole bit of you can get quite a bit of experience on an advanced moral world where you basically skip all the way to the local universe headquarters in terms of an actual developmental relationship to all the levels of the local universe. You go back and teach and relate, yeah, but you know you can lift mortal worlds up basically to the level of functioning, you know, that you can get on all those intermediate stages.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's the whole thing. You know, the whole local universe is trying to, you know, figuratively lift itself up to the level of the super universe so that it can become, you know, really seamlessly part of the super universe rather than provisionally part of it like we are now.
I remember, not whether any of us have anything to be concerned about there.
we'll all have a lot to do on Mansion World Number 1.
Number 1. You guys aren't exempt from anything.
I told Ken I'm waiting for him on 3. Yeah.
And also, you know, just wanted to mention in passing, we've talked about this number of times. Well, how long does it take you to get through the 7 mansion worlds, say? You know, let alone, say, to get through the local universe or whatever. You know, there isn't, one of the reasons, they're telling you one of the reasons why they don't say is there just really isn't anything to say. I mean, for some it's very short, for some it's very long. I mean, it's not because you're wrong or something, you know, because it takes you 100 million years to go through the 7 mansion worlds instead of 5 years. That's just part of it.
Yeah.
You know, what you will be after however long it takes you is something that no one else in the universe can be. I mean,
it's unique.
Yeah. I mean, it all adds to you being all the more different. You know, that's like I was saying. I mean, you get lots and lots of distinct individuality from experience. You know, so even though we all go through the same 7 mansion worlds, say, I mean, it doesn't do the same thing to us. You know, it's not just turning us into automatons at the end, or we're interchangeable.
That core of tertiary supernatham, which is chiefly assigned to the service of the pilgrims of time, is classified as follows. 1, the harmony supervisors. It must be apparent that some sort of coordinating influence would be required, even in perfect Havona, to maintain system and to ensure harmony in all the work of preparing the pilgrims of time for their subsequent paradise achievements. Such is the real mission of the harmony supervisors, to keep everything moving along smoothly and expeditiously.
The hormonal accident.
Oh, that's maybe a little crude. they might take offense at that.
Originating on the first circuit, they serve throughout Havona, and their presence on the circuits means that nothing can possibly go amiss. A great ability to coordinate a diversity of activities involving personalities of differing orders, even multiple levels, enables these supernatham to give assistance wherever and whenever required. They contribute enormously to the mutual understanding of the pilgrims of time and the pilgrims of eternity.
The fact that they weren't going to talk about the pilgrims of eternity, they've already mentioned about 6 times.
Yeah.
You know, did you notice that?
Really?
Yeah. You know, and plus they said that core of tertiary supernatham, which is chiefly assigned to the service of the pilgrims of time. You know, can you think about the others? You know, okay. I mean, again, you see all of this again, the associative things very definitively in play, fostering the associativity, and look at how delightfully they talk about them to start out with here. It must be apparent that some sort of coordinating, you know, are they not daughters of mother? Yeah. Coordinating influence and would be required, even in perfect Havona, to maintain system. Not maintain the system,
right.
Maintain system.
Yeah.
This distinction is vital.
Yeah.
Right? For in a cosmic system.
Right?
You know, they're fostering, you know, this genuine personality linkage through the individuality of the whole and maintaining system. There's only system through the individuality of the whole.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, there's just relationship. Yeah, you don't want. It's not a pile of cosmic relationships. It's a cosmic system, singular. Mm-hmm. There's one system. You're either part of it or you're not.
Yeah. Where do you find this statement about the individuality of the whole?
That's up in paper 112.
Page 1225, isn't it?
And I don't remember the page number in the single column, but right in the first few pages of paper 112.
That's because I went looking for it, and it's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So that's a very direct reference to, you know, that's that paragraph that has system italicized. That's where they're defining what they mean by this word right here is up there in paper 112. Mm. Yeah.
That's good.
Again, if you don't have a holistic relationship to the book, see. All right. So nothing can possibly go amiss, not because it's automatic, but because there's a lot of tertiary supernafim who are keeping track of every little detail. Chris wants to talk to Bob from Paradise, and they're right there making sure that is perfect harmony when Chris talks to Bob. No discord, because if there's one little shred of discord in that that interaction, shatters. It's a rock in the pond of Havona.
Pages 1227.
The end of section 2?
Page 12. No, it's at the end of section 1.
End of section 1.
27. It's like the second to the, the third to the last paragraph.
What's the page?
Yeah, this distinction is vital.
Two, the chief recorders. These angels are created on the second circuit, but operate everywhere in the central universe. They record in triplicate, executing records for the literal files of Havona, for the spiritual files of their order, and for the formal records of Paradise. In addition, they automatically transmit the transactions of true knowledge import to the living libraries of Paradise, the custodians of knowledge in the of the primary order of Supernathum.
Oh, wait a minute. This sounds familiar. Remember we talked about them back there in Section 5 in the previous paper, the custodians of records on Paradise are brought up from the senior chief recorders, they said. So here they are. Like I said, the tertiary Supernafim, one of the groups is the chief recorders. And notice the triplicate here. Not just duplicate. You've got the literal files of Havona, and that's, in other words, the material. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's a really fancy material in the central universe, but, you know, it's the material files, records, and then the spiritual ones. And then they also, you know, for those custodians of records on Paradise, they send a record up there. So they're interacting with their order that have gone up to Paradise. And then, like they mentioned back there in the previous paper, this linkage to the primary Supernafim, the custodians of knowledge as well. So you got that whole, that's the rest of the story from the previous paper there.
The broadcasters. The children of Third Circuit Spirit function throughout Havona, although their official station is located on planet number 70, in the outermost circle. These master technicians are the broadcast receivers and senders of the central creation and the directors of the space reports of all deity phenomena on Paradise. They can operate all of the basic circuits of space.
Okay, so here's a big important part of that whole information dissemination system we see here is a kind of a hub in the central universe that's these tertiary supernafim are in charge of, amazing little tidbits. You know, let's see if you can answer the question, why planet number 70 on the outermost circuit? There is a puzzler for you. Yeah. I haven't figured that one out yet.
There's some physics to that.
I mean, obviously 70 is a number you can rationalize with pretty easily, but my goodness, I don't know. There must be something that is potentially gettable there, or they wouldn't have said it. They threw that in. Yeah. I have no idea why.
Don says it has a nice climate.
Not too hot, not too cold.
Not a lot of tornadoes that knock down the broadcast towers. Because it messes up the circuits and the radios.
No tsunamis, no earthquakes.
Yeah. I think that's a good rationalization scheme.
What planet should we? Oh, 70.
I mean, especially here, let me just say it real quick. I mean, look at these tiny little paragraphs. I mean, okay, so don't limit them. You know, I mean, there's obviously some. When we actually engage this, you know, it'll probably, we could probably spend, I just want to sit here and watch this for a million years. You'll say, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. This is just totally cool. I think I love these guys. Right. I mean, it's probably, plus they're persons and you can interact with them. I mean, yeah. Don't let it, you know, especially when you're talking about broadcasters and stuff, don't think of it mechanically. There's some really, really personable individuals that you'll get to know and love. And, and you know, you'll write volumes about them. They're reduced to a little paragraph in the fifth epic of Revelation. Yeah.
Four, the messengers take origin on circuit number four. They range the Paradise of Ona system as bearers of all messages requiring personal transmission. They serve their fellows, the celestial personalities, the Paradise pilgrims, and even the ascendant souls of time.
So I have a question for Pam. What beings have we already read about that also were needed for personal messages between point A and point B?
Solitary messengers.
Solitary messengers. Yes, these are called the messengers. So, see their commonalities. They're trying to keep things uniform.
Yeah.
But, you know, here again, you need it. Even as cool as things will undoubtedly be in Havona, with all these amazing abilities to, you know, to communicate with their internet, you know, or however you want to think about it. There's no substitute for actual. There's things that can't be conveyed even by the coolest of circuits. You know, in a place where the tongue of Havona is. You remember the rest of the sentence from the Celestial Artisans? The tongue of Havona is harmony. They don't use tongue. What expression? Language. What's the word I'm trying to think of? And I'll think of it in a second. But anyway, yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, it's harmony. You know, you have this. So when you communicate, it's this incredible symphonic sort of a thing. The speech, that's what they say. The speech of Havona is harmony.
Yep. That takes a lot of associativity.
So, but anyway, here we are again. And, you know, what do we have? One, two, three sentences. All I get is three sentences. Okay. And they're probably the most amazing thing you'll think you've ever met. Incredible persons. I mean, how personable must they be if they're the ones that are given this ability to be most personable in interaction?
Thinking about if there's such a counterpart as cyberspace and digital storage of information, clearly they've worked out how not to allow individuals to upload their own personal drivel, thereby subjecting others to the insatiable urge to look at it.
Well, that doesn't sound like an issue or anything.
I think that's one of our biggest problems right now on this planet.
Right, you know, we remember when they were talking about the integrity of the records and all that. I mean, okay, you know, there's, you can't just, you know, throw a bunch of debris onto, if you will, onto this.
Got a thought about the circuit number four correlation?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can begin to think about that once you understand what the circuits are for. So again, when you unpack the central universe, you can begin to at least get. It's easier to understand the secondary supernovim than the tertiary. I'll tell you that much. But you notice that even though they have origin on a particular circuit, they range everywhere. And, you know, they're coming from the circuit spirits, which initially are all the same. So, you know, it's not going to be as immediately appreciable, understandable, let's say it that way, what each of those circuits is sort of fundamentally about deity-wise and how that ties to this. because they're a little bit, you know, they're a little bit more in that Trinity mode of the Trinity is on all the circuits equally. Mm-hmm. So.
5, the intelligence coordinators. These tertiary superniphim, the children of the fifth circuit spirit, are always the wise and sympathetic promoters of fraternal association between the ascending and the descending pilgrims. They minister to all the inhabitants of Avona, and especially to the ascenders, by keeping them currently informed regarding the affairs of the universe of universes. By virtue of personal contacts with the broadcasters and the reflectors, these living newspapers of Avona are instantly conversant with all information passing over the vast news circuits of the central universe. They secure intelligence by the Havona graph method, which enables them automatically to assimilate as much information in 1 hour of Urantia time as would require 1,000 years for your most rapid telegraphic technique to record.
Okay, we'll get into the fun little analogy there at the end in a second. But, you know, so notice how the intelligence coordinator, again, coordinator, of course, and the harmony supervisors, where we saw the coordinating influence. So they're working together. One, they're, you know, here they describe them as promoters of fraternal association. And then there's, you know, the harmony supervisors are sort of like really more about, you know, making sure that the linkage, you know, the linkage has been promoted, and now they're fostering the perfection of that linkage. So the two are working together. Mm-hmm.
That's our first circuit. Harmony
supervision. So when they did telegraphic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, okay, so no.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, like telegraph.
I know, but I'm just saying
that
we
didn't
realize we had computers.
But nothing has changed. We still use, we call it baud rate.
Yeah.
Nothing has changed in terms of the way we think about it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to explain that here in a second. Okay, so, you know, but then they throw in this additional twist about the quote-unquote living newspapers. Okay, and so they have this, they're this access to all this information that is involved in promoting fraternal association, just to reflect on that. I'll let you do that a little on your own. But let's get that little analogy. So the Havona graph method, you know, there's a term they coined there. Remember that the higher you go in language, the more holistic, the more nonlinear the interaction is. For us, we have this very linear interaction where we literally have sequences of letters, you know, or at least sounds that we're stringing together, you know, sending over to the other person in a choo-choo train fashion, and then they're taking it in one car at a time. Okay, it's very simplistic and linear. The higher you get, the more it's like the way you went, like I say all the time, when you look at a picture, you know, you don't go up to the upper left corner and rasterize it, you know. You know, and bring it in one pixel at a time, left to right, top to bottom. Okay, you bring it in holistically. Okay, and so, you know, once you start getting up into the local universe, super universe, especially here, you have these thought symbols. You know, a picture, a graph. You know, however you want to think about it, a holistic thing that are the basic nuggets that you're communicating. Okay. And so in that sense, when you initially coined the idea of baud rate, you know, the speed at which you're sending communication even over, you know, telegraphic, you know, by telegraphic techniques, you have some symbol. And you're saying, well, it takes this much time for one symbol to go, you know, two symbols, three symbols, whatever that symbol might be. And so just in that symbol sense, and a while back I did some quick calculations. So, see, the ratio is 1,000 years to an hour, okay, and that's 8,765,820. That's what that ratio is, okay. So, you know, over 8.5 million differential there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you take those kind of baud rates, you know, symbol communication rates from back then, and ramp it up by that factor, you're talking about 400 million symbols per second. So, you know, and Havona, these thought symbols are going to be gigantic from our perspective. You know, it's like, you know, everything that every human has ever thought probably wouldn't fill one thought symbol, you know. So, you know, just think about it like that. It's, that doesn't really mean anything. It's like, well, you know, okay, so it's 400 million, but I still don't have any idea how big this thing is, so who cares how many of them are going per second? So take it down to something we can relate to. Make the symbol a binary digit. The simplest symbol that you can have. It's either a zero or a one. And just put it in that terms. Even in those lowly terms, what kind of a communication rate? And, of course, notice it's more than communication. Assimilate as much information. It's not just passing in one ear and out the other, okay? They're living newspapers. They're assimilating this at this rate. So you put it in digital terms of today, where the symbol is a binary digit, a bit. Think of that in terms of text, communicating ASCII text. If you made you know, the Urantia book into a pile of ASCII text, you know, a set of bytes and, you know, bits, what that rate would be about 7 Urantia books a second. So even in the lowliest of symbol terms, taking it as down as far as you can so you can wrap your mind around it, they're assimilating equivalent of 7 Urantia books a second.
Not the same Urantia book 7 times.
No.
7 different kinds of, right, Urantia books.
And of course, now then multiply that by some gigantic number to actually get, you know,
yeah, what their bits are.
What their symbols are that they're communicating at that rate. Yeah, give you an idea.
Insane.
Okay, it's going to be something just completely mind-boggling. You know, So, you know, think about that when you're talking. When we've talked about that with the revelators. When the revelators are engaging this task, they go, okay, so I need to write something about this aspect of humanity or history or whatever. Okay, so let me assimilate everything that's ever happened on this planet out there in the sticks. Okay, I got that. I mean, he now has everything that everyone has ever thought, ever written, everything, you know. It just takes him a split second. He's got it all. Sorts it out in his head and spits out the paper. Okay, I mean, it's just child's play, you know, when you're dealing with beings that have this level of mind. Okay. Now, not all of the beings that are revelators are going to have this kind of angelic, incredible, associative ability, but, you know, it gives you an idea. You know, the divine counselor can stick, you know, everything that's ever been said or written into his head, you know, very easily, and, you know, and do like he did, where he took every sacred text that's ever been written, and he took little snippets out of it and made a paragraph. Yeah. I mean, that's child's play for him. So the thing about, see, before there was the digital age, you actually talked about it a little bit more in appropriate terms. The telegraphic thing is not as outdated as you think. Because you go back then, they don't talk about bits, they talk about symbols. And that's exactly what we're talking about. They're talking about thought symbols. That's the expression they use. Okay, so think of it in that terms is very appropriate still.
6, the transport personalities. These beings of origin on circuit number 6 usually operate from planet number 40 in the outermost circuit. It is they who take away the disappointed candidates who transiently fail in the deity adventure. They stand ready to serve all who must come and go in the service of Havona and who are not space traversers.
Okay, so
Black Mariah.
Yeah, we mentioned that, you know, and you'll get into that more with the secondary Supernafim. You know, if you're from one of the other super universes, there's this possibility that you might not be able to acquire all the experience you need to recognize, say, the Eternal Sun in your super universe, and so you'll have to go out to another super universe and get some more experience. So there's transport angels to take you back out. And, you know, this is, you know, where you start to see the first hints of, okay, there's transport personalities and there's not transport personalities, you say. Okay, but it's a little bit more than that. Notice they say, I mean, who are not space traversers. I mean, it's not just an issue of whether or not you're a transport personality or not. It's whether or not you're a space traverser or not. Mm-hmm. And they're surprisingly mum on the details of this, about which beings are actually space traversers. Yeah. And they tell you all this stuff about, you know, there's transport, Sakhanafim and Suburnafim and whatnot. But you know, like, what about intelligence coordinators? Are they space traversers? Or do they have to hitch a ride on a transport Suburnafim in order to go from point A to point B? You know, we've talked about that a lot. There's, you know, and it appears, you know, it's not very concrete, but it appears that by and large, angels can't transport themselves. I mean, transport angels obviously can transport themselves and someone else with them, but you know, there's nothing that, you know, that would lead you to definitively conclude that all the angels are space traversers. I think, at this point at least, that they have to be transported. Yeah. And the thing about that is, to really be a space traverser, you have to have this very intimate relationship with the Paradise Trinity. Okay? These are creatures of the infinite spirit. But there's these, you know, one of the mystery of mysteries, and one of the Father's roles, remember, is related to the transport person. There, some of these angels pick up on that fundamental linkage between the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity, and they come out with a relationship to the Paradise Trinity that their fellows don't have, that they can actually traverse space on their own. Not only that, they can carry a being with them while they do it. Even more mysterious. Okay. Yeah, like they mentioned, like with the divine counselors and stuff. I mean, those Trinity archbeings, they're space traversers. They have this relationship to the Trinity, and they, you know, or us as finaliters, our relationship to the Trinity. We're space traversers as finaliters. But so it's just another one where you wish they would have just said that one little thing and cleared that up. But like I said, I'm still keeping the door open, but I don't think that most of these beings, you know, like say Melchizedek, I don't think could take themselves from point A to point B. They have to have an angel take them there.
Now they mention the ones that range all the circuits. That doesn't necessarily mean they're self-locomoting.
No, see, it doesn't. It means, you know, they can gauge all those delineated circuits. But what about the ubiquity of the Paradise Trinity? That's another issue. Can you transcend the individuality and engage the whole and be a space traverser?
And the final is 7, the reserve course. The fluctuations in the work with the ascendant beings, the Paradise Pilgrims, and other orders of beings sojourning in Havona, make it necessary to maintain these reserves of Suburnafim on the pilot world of the seventh circle, where they take origin. They are created without special design and are competent to take up service in the less exacting phases of any of the duties of their seraphic associates. Superaphic associates of the tertiary order.
Okay, so even though that sounds like, okay, sort of just a footnote, I mean, there, you know, there's a detail there. So they're very careful. See, to take up service in the less exacting phases. So in all of these other 6, they're telling you, you have some exacting phases that only that group of tertiary Suburnafim can do. But apparently there's deputy jobs. You know, there's adjutant jobs that are involved in that. And, you know, even in transport, just the way they say that, it looks like they're sort of hinting between the lines. You know, these guys can't transport anyone. It's not like they can take over that job. But to transport someone, there's all kinds of, you know, people that have to help with that. You know, and they can certainly do that stuff. You know, if there aren't other transport personalities to help with that, if they're all busy or whatever, some of the auxiliary roles. Mm-hmm. But even more significant about that, the fact that there can be a group of these, a group of these angels that are in a sense the least common denominator, you know, or whatever you want to say, you know, they're a commonality across the other. So that points out, like I said, I mean, you have this very trinity and common aspect to the circuit spirits to start with. So it's not surprising there would be a group of angels that sort of holds on to, or really is the direct expression of that commonality, and they stay that way. And then there's sort of the fundamental, and then there's harmonics on top of that fundamental.
And it also points out that they're clearly not material, because we can't conceive of a material part that is substitutable for all kinds of other different things. It has to be so specific. But if they're not material beings, then they can morph in that way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. See, so again, that malleability, that adaptability, you know, is technically what we're talking about. I hope I didn't belabor those too much, but I didn't want it to be too boilerplate. I mean, try to think about even something like, the Reserve Corps, blah, 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 going to the next. I mean, every one of these, when you read about the angels, there's a Reserve Corps, and you tend to just, you know, yada, yada, and skip over it. Try to see what, you know, what's in there. See if you can appreciate a little bit more about the complexity, you know. And even though they're just called the Reserve Corps, they're going to be the coolest persons you ever had, you know, had a beer with, you know, in Havana. Okay, they're going to be fun to spend time with. Just keep that in mind. All right. So next time we'll get into the secondary part of him. And that's where it really gets fun for us.
Yay.
Because unlike the tertiary, you know, the secondaries are very closely associated with our ascension career. So we'll get into that. And then that's where Chris's oft-quoted line is when we get to the Pilgrim Helpers. Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Let's take a moment here.